You're listening to the Rubbish Trip Podcast. Two no waste nomads talk trash with people in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
In 2006, the Waste Minimisation Bill, a private member's bill in the name of Nando Tansosh, was pulled from the ballot in the New Zealand House of Parliament. After an extended period going through select committee and the various readings in the House, the bill was finally passed in 2008 as the Waste Minimisation Act. The Waste Minimisation Act shifted Council's focus from simply managing waste towards actively seeking to minimise waste as well. The Act requires councils to produce a waste minimisation and management plan every 6 years that sets targets for waste minimisation over the period. The Act also instituted a waste disposal levy of $10 per tonne of waste sent to landfill. 50% of the money raised from this levy goes towards helping councils implement their waste minimisation and management plan, and the other 50% goes towards the National Waste Minimisation Fund, which funds projects that promote or achieve waste minimisation. However, perhaps the cornerstone of the Act is the framework it provides for product stewardship schemes. Product stewardship is about encouraging or requiring all people and organisations involved in the life of a product to share responsibility for that product's life cycle, including any environmental harm that may be caused if that product becomes waste. Among other things, this part of the Act could be used to implement bottle deposit, cash for container schemes, or plastic bag levies and bans, and make manufacturers responsible for ensuring their products get recycled, reused, or recovered. Power to institute these schemes lies with the Minister for the Environment. In mid-August 2017, we sat down with Nando Tansosh to seek his reflections on the bill, its passage through the House, and what progress has been made almost a decade since the legislation was enacted. We note that, since the time of recording the interview, the government has confirmed that in May 2018, the sale and manufacture of microbeads will be banned. This is the first such ban to be implemented under the Act.
Thank you very much, Nando, for speaking with us today about a little bit of the history of the Waste Minimisation Act and what it's looking like today. We thought we might start off by just asking you if you could share a little bit about what brought you to take on the Waste Minimisation Act as a private member's bill and why waste was something that was important to you personally.
So Mike Ward had been the person responsible for waste minimisation in the Green Party, and so he left Parliament. So it was a portfolio that needed to be filled. And at the same time, I gave up some of my responsibilities around some of the social issues I was involved in and took on more environmental. And partly was a recognition that the Green Party needed to be stronger on the environment side. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting the context of the discussions today around the Teddy and, you know, should the Greens be focused on the environment?
Yeah, sure.
Because at the time, most of our MPs weren't focused on the environment. They were focused around social issues, and that's been true of the Green Party for most of its history, I think. So it was a deliberate attempt to kind of be more environmental focused or have more balance on the environment side. But it's also, waste minimisation is an area that I was already interested in, and I suppose because it's one of those things, it's around how humans interact with the environment, and how do we... It's such a critical part of the broader sustainability agenda, if you like, that we don't put more waste into the ecosystem than it can assimilate. And it's an area where there's so much to do. I mean, generally we're so shocking around creating waste, but there's so much that can be done. You know, there's huge potential. And in terms of kind of creating systems which are nature mimicking, you know, and of course nature doesn't have waste. Nature has systems that cycle all the nutrients and everything through. And so it's a really interesting area to work in with so much potential, but interesting kind of complex, knotty problems to untangle, you know? So it was something I was quite keen to work on anyway.
Sure. And I mean, I think the thing with waste is in some ways it can cross across political boundaries because, I mean, everybody produces waste and actually it's very economically inefficient to be throwing away a lot of the stuff that we do because it's more like resources rather than waste.
Yeah.
But when your private member's bill was pulled out of the ballots, did you find that there was a degree of cross-party support or was it quite sort of finely balanced in terms of getting through?
I think it was a massive change in the process of the bill going through.
Mm-hmm.
So when the members' bill was pulled from the ballot, we passed the first reading and got it to select committee with a very narrow majority. So it was Greens, Labour, and I think it was United Future. So it was a very slim majority, got it to select committee, and Nationals, I remember, were pretty adamantly opposed to it.
Mm.
Almost on principle, bizarrely, you know. But once it got to select committee, and it sat there for a long time, I think it was about a year and a half, it was one of the longer bills. And during that time, the select committee really engaged with the issue, and we heard from waste minimisation people, we heard from the community recycling network, we heard from commercial operators, we heard from the corporate Coca-Cola and all these guys took, because bottle deposits were a big issue at the time, and so they were opposed to that. So we heard a very wide range of views and really quite detailed discussion. And the interesting thing was the transformation that happened in the heads of the other MPs on the select committee. So John Carter, who's I think he was the National Whip, went through a really incredible transformation, such that by then, towards the end of the bill, he was saying, oh, we should rename it the Resource Recovery Bill, and really got that waste is a resource that's being wasted. And so, so it's quite powerful, the change in thinking. And so as a result of that, I mean, we amended the bill considerably in select committee, and I think parts of it needed amending. It was a bit... it was a bit draconian, I think, in places for the New Zealand context, because New Zealanders are not using it, kind of thing. But so the bill changed, but also the MPs changed. And so when it came out the other side, it actually passed the second and third reading with almost unanimous support in Parliament.
And it's pretty amazing.
So it was, as I say, the bill did change, but even the final shape of the bill, if that had been even the first reading, it still would have had a narrow majority. But it was really the mind shift that happened in people. And when you're confronted with the enormous waste of resources and waste of money and waste of non-renewable resources, which are being thrown in a hole, which could be an input into our economy and all the community stuff. When you look at the like the community recycling network, especially all the community building that can happen around it, people really moved by that and carried away by that. It was really great. It was great to see.
Cool. Did you find that you had to sort of compromise, that the bill was compromised as it went through the process, some of the principles of it, and kind of toned down and perhaps not as effective as they could be in its final form?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. I don't know that I would say the principles were compromised, but I think what was compromised was the implementation. And as a result, it's been relatively ineffective. And I'm really disappointed at the way it hasn't really come to its potential, But so through the process, as I say, we removed some of the kind of more mandatory stuff. The government at the time was very unwilling to alienate business, and so they want it to be more kind of business friendly, which I suppose means kind of more voluntary, less mandatory. We had the Packaging Council was very strong about, let us self-regulate. There was a very strong thing about industry can self-regulate. And if you look at the evidence, that's industry doesn't self-regulate by and large, and so it was kind of unsatisfactory. But nevertheless, that was the way it was that even the support we had at the first reading would have been lost if we had kept it in the form it was introduced in. So we had to make some changes. And there's a number of things that I think are disappointing. So, for example, one of the things that the bill... And it's a really comprehensive bill. Like, there's a whole lot of different elements to it that are... So it was quite a complex bill to work through. But if you take, the part around the waste levy, the idea that waste going to landfill has a levy on it, this adds a cost to landfilling, so it moves people away from landfilling, and that money goes into a waste minimisation fund, which is used to fund waste minimisation activities. So it's kind of, you get a win on both ends, And at the time we were saying, well, to to change behaviour, you need it to be a substantial amount. We were thinking like $50 a tonne would be what would be have been ideal. And if the principle of it is that you're internalising the cost, so you're actually looking at the true cost of landfilling and saying we're going to build that into the price so that the price of landfilling accurately reflects what it costs to actually landfill. It also needs to be around that figure. And we worked with the Business Council for Sustainable Development around what those figures would be. But politically, all we could get was $10 a tonne and an agreement that that would lift over time. But of course, so I was introduced at $10 a tonne, and since, you know, almost immediately we had a change of government, and so that it's remained at $10 a tonne since then. It's almost 10 years ago now. So the amount of the levy is not really enough to change behaviour on its own. I mean, it does. It still creates a fund, and I think that's been useful. In fact, here in Whakatane, you've got the crew resource recovery thing was set up with waste minimisation funding. So I know it's had an impact on the ground, but the full impact of it has been like really diminished by political unwillingness to make it as strong as it needs to be.
Well, in terms of, yeah, the overall principles of the Act, it's pretty solid in terms of trying to get into place some coordinated system that would allow movement towards a circular economy, so modelled on how nature processes waste. And I guess the cornerstone of that would be the Product Stewardship Scheme. And, you know, looking through the Act, there are so many provisions in there that would allow things like a bottle deposit, cash for containers schemes, and putting levies on all kinds of things or banning things. So kind of in many ways the hard mahi has been done in terms of getting that legislation in place. However, nothing has really happened in terms of the Product Stewardship Scheme part of the Act. Do you have any thoughts on why that is? Why, for example, we have, you know, we have campaigns like the Kiwi Bottle Drive to try and get Section 23 activated to get, but there's no movement.
It's basically a lack of political will. And I mean, I could speculate as to whether Labor, if they'd remained in government, would have introduced product stewardship. I think even they would have been reluctant to do so. There's a very strong, by and large, a very strong business lobby against product stewardship and against businesses actually taking full responsibility of the environmental impacts of their business. And of course, while business can externalise those costs, you know, it's effectively an environmental subsidy for business. So it's really important that we do kind of sheet home those costs to the people who are creating them. So I think Labor would have been reluctant anyway, but certainly with a change of government, the National Party has been ideologically opposed to anything that would, that would introduce product stewardship and real transparency around those kind of costs. The interesting thing, though, is that there's been some sectors who are calling out for the government to regulate them. You know, so, I mean, it's not actually that all business is opposed to product stewardship and that it would be alienating business. There's some businesses which are saying, look, we want to do this. What we want to make sure is that there's no free riders coming along who can avoid the cost while the rest of us take it on. We want it to apply to the whole sector. And even then, the government has absolutely refused to implement product stewardship, and I kind of don't get that other than that it's purely ideological.
I mean, in fact, we've had that experience too of hearing, you know, even from supermarkets who say, actually, we do want to stop handing out plastic bags, but we don't want to be the only ones that are doing it, because then we lose business.
And they've had, some of them have had that kind of customer reaction, negative reaction to that, which is putting a barrier to things as well.
I mean, do you think there's also a little bit of a tension in the Act in the sense that it tends to be councils that are predominantly responsible for waste management, yet most of the powers lie with the minister?
I think that's really true. And I think that's why it's kind of hard to get it on the agenda at a national level, because you're quite right, the people who are making the decisions aren't affected by the impacts of those decisions. And I'm not sure kind of how you overcome that, because councils aren't really in a position to introduce product stewardship. I mean, it's very difficult to introduce locally.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it has to be on a national level, I think, because if you've got the border issues and things like that. So I think it has to be a central government thing. You just have to have a minister for the environment who's actually committed to the environment. Unfortunately, yeah. Those seem to be few and far between.
You're now a counsellor, and one part of the Act that does seem to be working quite well is the requirement that councils produce every 6 years a waste minimisation and management plan, which sort of forces councils really to take stock of what they're doing and also where they're going, and particularly data collection, which has been quite useful.
Yes.
And has that been your experience as well, that this is, you know, that works quite well?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm interested in your view, because of course you've been travelling around and probably have a better idea of the range of things. But I think it is useful that there's, I mean, councils were already doing waste management plans in any case, but I think having minimisation and a focus on waste minimisation has been important. As you say, it means that at least on a regular basis, people are having to think about it. And, you know, if people start thinking about it and have to report against it, then that tends to move some things along. And, I mean, here in Whakatāne, you know, we're certainly not a leader in the country by any means, but you have seen incremental change happening. In fact, just since I've moved here, and I've only been here 3 years, we've moved from pretty restrictive curbside recycling scheme in the Whakatāne town itself to something that's much more comprehensive. And we're kind of, so in council we're getting reports as to the impacts on that, and still a way to go before we can really see the figures about how useful that's been. But you'd hope that the fact that we're taking the full range of plastics and things like that has got to be a good plan. Whether the council would have moved that way without having to do those plans, you know, you can't know, but I think it has been helpful. And the other thing is, he's saying having the data, I mean, there was one thing when the bill was going through that was a real issue, is that we actually had very little idea what was going on. And that was one of the drivers for some of the stuff, was around actually getting the data so we at least know what's happening, and then, you know, we can make further amendments or do further planning. But until you actually know what's going on, it's very hard to make decent legislation.
Well, and also actually for getting community groups moving and that kind of thing, having that data is really useful too. It's been really useful for us to be able to look at, for example, the proportion of what goes to landfill, the proportion of it coming from curbsides and households, because you can then say, for example, in the Wellington region, it's 33% of what's in landfill is from curbside.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's very high. And so that actually gives us, because, you know, lots of people will say to us, oh, well, it's all very well and good what you're doing, but actually most of the waste comes from business.
Yeah.
But then you can turn back and say, well, actually, a third of what's in landfill is coming from homes.
Wow,
so
that's phenomenal. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very high. Wellington has the biggest, one of the biggest rates of personal waste going to landfill in the country. So it's 200 kg per person from households.
Wow.
Which is very high.
And it's all, I mean, if it's curbside, you've got the tool right there, because it's like you're actually collecting it through the council. You can put in all those levers to to separate that and whatever. So
So no, that's a positive thing from the Act, is that actually the power of information is a good thing. But it would be great to see some more movement on the product stewardship. But anyway, well, it was really wonderful to talk with you, Nando, and to get a little bit of insight into the Act. It's also been delightful to have your dog Luna jumping around. She was very well behaved during the interview, so that's good. So, namihi kia koe.
Cool, Kia ora.